Good morning. You are listening to KBBI, and you are tuned to the coffee table. Today, it's a Fisherman's Academy. I'm joined in the studio by local fisherman and president of the North Pacific Fisheries Association, Malcolm Milne, Alaska Board of Fisheries member, Robert Ruffner, and North Pacific Fishery Management Council member, Buck Lakaitis. Good morning to all of you. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Aaron.
And
thanks for all your good fisheries reporting.
Thank you. And so I just wanted to get started. You all sit on boards of some kind. And Malcolm, you also sit as a, if I remember correctly, you're an alternate on the Cook Inlet Aquaculture Board of Directors. Is that right?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. So, you all sit on boards of some kind, and they make all sorts of policy-making decisions on different issues within various fisheries. But in general, why should young fishermen or someone that hasn't participated in the process in the past, why should they do that? Why should they participate, and what is the value, just more broadly speaking, whoever wants to go for that one?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Aaron. Well, this quote was not my personal one, but someone had told me that when I first started getting involved, and it's if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And that's the main reason, is because decisions are being made that affect our lives, and if you're not there, people will make them for you. So it's all the processes have ample opportunity to be involved, and it's important to step up and be at those tables.
Yeah, and then I guess, in general, you guys hear from all sorts of stakeholders. It's not just fishermen. I mean, who should be attending these meetings from any perspective? I mean, Robert, if you want to start with Board of Fisheries, you guys hear from just an incredibly wide variety of stakeholders.
We do, and speaking to your first question about, who and why should be involved, and, the listening audience that we have here at KBBI is on the Kenai Peninsula. Fisheries touch all of our lives on the peninsula, and so it's really important for people to engage in these fisheries for a whole host of reasons and help us to make better decisions, because we do really rely on the public a great deal to make our decisions. And the Board of Fisheries process is, we're proud of the fact that, when you look at other states across the nation, that we really have an open process that anybody can really make a meaningful difference in the regulations that we set.
Right. And do you want to maybe give a general rundown of different stakeholder groups that are involved generally, or?
Sure. Yeah. Well, in general terms, we have commercial fisheries that, they have a lot of different types of gear, and they don't always agree. And they, even within their specific gear groups, there's conflicts that uprise, and, we as board members do our best to take all that information in and sort it out. And then there's the obvious ones that we hear about a lot on the peninsula, is that all of these fish are accounted for, whether they need to make it back to the spawning grounds to produce the next generation of fish, or they're spoken for in the sport or commercial entities. And it is our job as board members to try to balance all that out for the best benefit of the state.
And maybe, Buck, you guys also hear from a variety of stakeholders, but is there a sector that you two, I guess, wish you heard from more, that you'd like to see more participation from, maybe?
Yeah, you bet. In the federal fisheries arena, we have a lot of paid representatives, the pollock industry, the processing industry, major gear groups have people who are, we hear from a lot, and they're, very professional. I guess you'd call them more like the suit and tie type of paid industry. In a way, it's a lobbyist. It's just a representative. They do a very good job at representing their, major fisheries participants. And I, for one, on the council, really appreciate just hearing from fishermen. We get a completely different perspective from fishermen, people on the grounds. It's always welcome to have someone who has that on the ground, on the water experience. And, I, for one, just find that testimony and written comments just to be very, very valuable.
All right, and looks like we're having a minor issue with Buck's mic. But in the meantime, for listeners, if you'd like to call in, you can call 235-7721, or you can email us at info@kbbi.org, and please include your name so we know who is asking the question. We're going to take just a short, brief break so we can get that mic fixed, and we'll jump right back into the coffee table here on KBBI AM 890 Homer.
That was is the either the mic or the
game. Put him in queue and let's test it.
Yeah,
we're not really on.
All right, we're go.
All right, and we are back here on KBBI, and you're listening to The Coffee Table. And again, this is a Fisherman's Academy, how fishermen and other stakeholders can get involved in the policymaking process in fisheries. And, you know, in as board members, maybe if you want to speak to how important is testimony when you're making a decision, and there's a variety of viewpoints, but I mean, how, I guess, does testimony affect the decision-making process? You know, do you go into an issue maybe thinking one way on thing and hear testimony that may sway your decision?
Yeah, so this is Robert. From the Board of Fisheries, I'd say absolutely. You know, we have a lot of reading materials that come to us before meetings, you know, probably not as much as the council that Buck sits on, but we have more than we can realistically get through and understand for these meetings. And so when you get to the meeting and you're sitting up there at the table, it's really important, as Buck said earlier, to make sure that we hear from the people that are on the grounds fishing, because they really have the best information available to feed to us from members of the public. So it's really important to have, you know, both written testimony and to show up at the meetings and participate in the public testimony.
Buck, did you have something to add?
I'll just expand on that. I agree with Mr. Ruffner. I think there's a real art to giving well-crafted testimony. I mean, a lot of people try to say too much and too quickly, and it's a skill, it's an art, and it takes some time and some practice, and it's good to come up and even speak of things that might not be your primary focus, but it can take years. I mean, I when I was on the other side of some of these tables as a young fisherman, I would write down my name, because when I got up and on the mic in front of a decision-making body, for instance, the Board of Fish, I would get a little bit flustered. And I think it's actually a good idea to come up and admit if you're new to the process, admit that you're a little bit nervous, and that makes you human. It puts you as a new stakeholder in the eyes of people, and maybe not as well polished, but it's really important. It's sincere. Admit you have some nervousness, but it's really hard to do 3 minutes of testimony or 5 minutes. You come all the way to Anchorage or wherever the meeting might be, and you need to rehearse a little bit and do the best you can, but it's very hard to get your very important testimony down to a few minutes. So that's a skill in itself, and that takes some time, and maybe, you know, obviously younger people are at a disadvantage there, and you definitely get better over time.
And Malcolm, you had something to add to that?
Yeah, Buck's got a great point there, but I don't want to let that discourage anyone from trying, because I think what he's saying is you need to practice it. But one thing I've noticed is a lot of times you have your own sphere of knowledge, and you maybe assume that everyone else understands what you understand. But a lot of times these managers are discussing, policymakers are looking over so many different fisheries that the knowledge you can bring of your particular fishery a lot of times really enlightens them, and they have things that happen on your deck that they have never been on a deck of a boat in some cases. So it really helps to be able to bring a perspective to the table.
Yeah, and you know, and so involved in a lot of these decisions, it's not just the testimony. There's a tremendous amount of science that's provided by staff to help make some of these decisions or inform them at least. And you know, sometimes that conflicts with public testimony. You know, and there have been disagreements over the results of surveys, you know, how they're conducted, you know, et cetera. But I guess how, as board members, how do you factor in the science and the testimony when you make a decision, especially when those things are at odds with each other? I assume that happens quite frequently.
It does. So this is Robert again. You know, trying to decipher the best available science, and I frequently say this when I'm on the board, is that it's really about a lot of the times we have to make decisions based on how much risk are we willing to tolerate. And the risk goes down when you have better information and better science, because that narrows the possibilities of what might happen when you're taking a particular action. But it's really incumbent upon us as board members, who are lay people, we're not scientists by training necessarily, to try to understand and talk to the people that actually do the research, just like we talk to the fishermen, because they're going to have the best source of information from their view of, because they're doing this as a job day in and day out to try to provide us the best information. So we have to weigh that science along with all the other considerations that we have, but it's really important for us to try to understand that to the best we can.
And now into how to get involved in general, but that can really vary depending on what regulatory body you're talking about. So can we first start explaining, maybe Buck, if you want to start with the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, which you sit on, can you explain what is in the purview of that council?
Sure. We basically are under the purview of the Magnuson-Stevens Fisheries Act. It's a federal law. We make policy or manage outside of 3 miles for the most part in the federal groundfish fisheries. So pollock, cod, et cetera. We also, with the state of Alaska, manage the king crab and Tanner crab and Apelia crab fisheries that occur outside of 3 miles. So this is 3 miles to the 200 mile limit. We also, to a certain extent, manage halibut, which is a treaty fish. So the IPHC will set quotas, but we'll take care of all of the IFQ regulations, which is the IFQ fisheries, halibut and sable fish in Homer is a very important business. There's about 2,500 stakeholders in the halibut fishery. And so It is the federal fisheries. We overlap with the state in many things and work closely with the state. And the Commissioner of Fish and Game is one of the seated members on the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council. The state of Alaska has the majority of seats, of voting seats. And so it's taken very seriously with the state. There's a lot of there is a lot of overlap, but primarily we're the federal fisheries policymakers.
And you touch on it just a little bit, but it has a close working relationship with IPHC. If you want to kind of explain that a little bit more, you guys deal with a lot of suggested charter quotas before IPHC, and those things are taken up with those folks.
Right, those are all overlapping, and it's very easy for stakeholders to get confused on who's doing what. IPHC sets season dates and quotas. The North Pacific Fisheries Management Council sets IFQ regulations, who can fish, how they fish, what limits on the amount of quota they might hold. Obviously, the charter industry is very much under our purview, bag limits, et cetera. So there's a fair amount of overlap, and we have some people get a little bit confused, and it is somewhat confusing. For instance, at this past meeting last week, the council allowed, at least took final action, the regulations haven't been written yet, to allow fishing for halibut in pots in the Bering Sea. So that's something the IPHC had already kind of given the blessing to. We followed up and caught up and made the specific regulations of how that might happen. You'll see that probably being allowed as a fishery in the next year. So that's one example of how we might overlap with the IPHC.
And Robert, if you want to kind of give a rundown of the Board of Fisheries and how it deals with what's in its purview within state fisheries.
Sure. So just like Mr. Lakaitis said, that the federal council deals with the waters between 300 and 200 miles, and there is some overlap in agreements between what the state and the feds do in that zone. But the Board of Fisheries primarily deals with the 3 miles offshore and inside of that, and then all of the freshwaters in the state. So we set the regulations, and probably the majority of the proposals that we hear and talk about are salmon. So we primarily deal with salmon, but we also deal with all the other species in there. You know, so we have a cod meeting coming up, so that's one of those overlapping areas where a lot of the cod are caught in federal waters, but we do have state water fisheries that are that 3 mile zone. So we will deal with that along with rockfish and other species, and it goes all the way down to the shellfish, so shrimp, crabs in the 3 mile zone, the dive fisheries in Southeast Alaska is something that we took up last year. So dealing with those, so we have quite a few species, but most of what we deal with, I would say, most of the proposals deal with salmon.
Yeah, if you want to explain when do these boards meet? Generally, they have different cycles, and different decisions are made at different meetings. So if I want to go back to you, Buck, if you want to kind of explain the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, it has a few more meetings than the IPHC does, but it still kind of follows this interim annual meeting cycle.
Right. So I just came back from Anchorage yesterday from a approximately 7-day meeting. We meet 5 times a year. They're about a week long. Our next meeting will be in December in Anchorage. Generally speaking, 3 of them are in Anchorage. One of them will be in an alternate community within the state of Alaska. So sometimes Juneau, sometimes Sitka. They've been in Nome, and I'm really happy to say that next October 2019, for maybe the first time ever, or maybe first time certainly in the last 25 years, the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council will meet in Homer. Approximately, I think they need a few hundred hotel rooms. There's a lot of staff, agency staff, council staff, many, many stakeholders, of course, come to attend these meetings, and of course the council itself. So great opportunity for residents of Homer, charter fishermen, IFQ fishermen. It's not just about fishermen as well. We had some really good stakeholder testimony just at this last meeting, at the very last topic of the meeting. It was a gentleman from Homer who I had never seen or heard from, made really compelling testimony about issues that are peripheral maybe to the operations of fisheries, but really concern the ecosystem and what he was seeing on the water around Ketchmack Bay. Great opportunity. So 5 meetings a year, and I guess we always, because it is federal fisheries management, there is 1 meeting a year that would take place outside of the state of Alaska, and usually in Seattle, and this year it will be in Portland in February.
Okay, and I want to remind listeners, if you have a question that you would like to pose to any of our 3 guests here, you can call 235-7721. Email info@kbbi.org, and please include your name so we know who is asking the question. And we do have 1 email question. We'll get to that later. But Robert, if you want to explain, the Board of Fisheries follows a different meeting cycle. It's an annual and a regional base, or not a 3-year cycle, and it's a regional base, correct?
That's correct. So presently what we do right now is we cover all the state, you know, that 3 mile ocean water, you know, 3 miles offshore, and all those freshwaters. We do that on a 3-year rotating cycle. So last year we did Prince William Sound and South, so we did all of Southeast Alaska. This year we're going to do, we have a state cod meeting that's coming up next week. That'll be our first regulatory meeting that we have for this year. And we do 4 or 5 meetings a year, based on that cycle. So this coming year, so we have proposals for right now that we're reading on and getting up to speed, will be going west from Kodiak. So we'll do Chignik, the Area M fishery, you know, False Pass, round the corner and do Bering Sea, and up north in the Yukon and Kuskokwim. So that'll be this year, sort of a western and northwestern cycle. And then the following year, we'll come back to Central Alaska.
And you know, and it's not just the boards themselves that are helping craft these policies. There are many committees and groups that are kind of under the umbrella of each organization. If either of you want to kind of explain, I know it varies a little bit, but what are some of those committees and how do those kind of factor into the process?
Sure. So I'll just stick with the state and Board of Fisheries. So we as a board, we're really pretty reluctant to come up with our own proposals, and we get a lot of criticism for that when we do. There are times where it's really necessary to meld three or four proposals together to come up with a common solution as a board. But really, we're very reliant on the public and have a very public process that starts with the local advisory councils that come up with proposals that individuals may come up with or the advisory councils may come up with. And those then get forwarded to us on this rotating cycle, and they kind of come up through the ranks, and then we see those proposals, and that's the ones that we deliberate on and work back and forth on. So that's how the state process works. It's very grassroots oriented in its nature, and that it should come from the bottom up so that we see those proposals from the public.
And the MPFMC, does it vary?
Yeah, very, very much similar. We rely on our committees to prioritize and advise the council. So some of our committees, which actually have Homer residents participating in, one is the committee that deals with the Observer Program, and they're under a new acronym, and I can't quite remember what it is, but it's basically the Observer Advisory Committee. The other, and we have a member from Homer who's on that committee doing very important work with regards to the Federal Observer Program, the Partial Cover Program. We also have an IFQ committee where we have members from Homer who participate in the IFQ committee. They also advise the council on prioritizing different analytical tasks and whatnot, and then most recently we have this committee that very much overlaps with Mr. Ruffner's authority, and that's the it is called the Salmon FMP committee. So that's the committee that will look at the federal side of managing the Cook Inlet salmon fishery, and we also there are is at least one member, well, many members are actually on the Kenai Peninsula for that one.
And, you know, and so the other step to getting involved is actually figuring out what's on the agenda. And so in general, you can head over to the, you know, North Pacific Fishery Management Council website or the Board of Fisheries or the IPHC website. But, you know, having covered some of these issues, just looking at the agenda, it can be incredibly confusing trying to navigate when these topics will come up during the meeting, or even just fully understanding the science side of things. And actually, Malcolm, I kind of want to pose this to you. You know, is it a steep learning curve for fishermen like yourself or stakeholders hoping to get involved to, you know, or at least just track some of these issues?
Yeah, thanks for the question. There is definitely a learning curve involved, but I've noticed it's been getting easier and easier, well, partly because I've been spending more time in it, but I also think the bodies themselves have been better communicating through their websites. If you look at either one of the websites, there's a lot of information on there, more than you can get through in a day, but they have ways how you get involved. You can listen to the meetings online. You can submit comments real easily through the online website. So if you're interested at all, I would say would be the first place to start.
Right. And you know, and in submitting comments, you know, Malcolm mentioned, you know, there's the barrier for some of actually getting to some of these meetings, and you know, and you can certainly listen online and you know, give post comment online right on the agenda sometimes. But are there other ways that folks can submit comments or testimony to make sure that the boards see those things? I don't know, Robert, if you want to take from the Board of Fisheries standpoint.
Sure. Yeah. No. And I would add on to what Malcolm said is that, you know, we have a really some excellent staff with the Department of Fish and Game that their job is to kind of keep these boards running and functional and make sure that they're effective for the public. And my experience has been is that if a member of the public is confused or concerned about, hey, I'm not getting my points across or I don't know how to get them there, you know, contacting our executive director, he's very available and very readily to answer those types of questions to make sure that information gets to us, because you know, particularly in Upper Cook Inlet is one of our beast of a meetings, right? It's 14 days plus or minus a day of kind of nonstop action. And when we get into the heart of those meetings, it's really tough for somebody that's not there to engage with us. So my advice, I guess, to the public would be that you try to get, you know, reach out to us before those types of meetings if you're not going to be able to be there, because all of us as board members, my experience has been that we're pretty open to hearing those comments, and those types of things have made a big influence in my decision. So they can reach out to us outside of the meetings as well.
Right. And Buck, did you have something to add?
Well, just one thing that's slightly different with the council process is the Board of Fish process has a proposal cycle. So there's an annual cycle, or every 3 years there will be the opportunity for someone to propose a change of regulation. It's written out in a nice packet. It's a very good process that everybody understands. The council gets a lot different. Lots of times there's no, people say, well, how do I interject a new idea into the process? And we don't ask for proposals from the public in many times. So it's slightly different, a little bit confusing. And again, there is an opportunity at the end of every council meeting, which is called staff tasking. It's the very last thing we do. And that's kind of where new ideas are generated and possible new topics of discussion or concerns from the public. And again, that's the very end of a 7-day meeting. A lot of people don't even participate, and it's kind of a poorly understood period of time that is very important at councils, that if you have a new idea, you that's kind of the place. And sometimes it takes, just in general on all of these things, as a policymaker, don't get discouraged if the first time you bring a new topic to one of these bodies that's never been heard of before, don't get discouraged that it doesn't go somewhere the very first time. It's important to have a presence over time, get to know not only the decision makers but also staff, be informed. And I've seen many times where the first time someone brings something up, it's not picked up, but as either other people bolster those same concerns or that person is persistent, you'll see those very important new topics get picked up.
And Malcolm, you had something to add to that?
Yeah, well, a couple things actually. One thing I was thinking about, and Buck's got a great point about being persistent.